Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today. It is Tuesday, July 12th, 2022. Wow, it's just hard to believe 2022, over halfway through the year, and soon it'll be 2023, then 2024, and then pretty soon 2030. You know the drill, right? Tomorrow we're going to work on our alphabet as opposed to the calendar. All right, got a lot of stuff to get into. That was kind of a lighthearted attempt at lighthearted, a little bit of lightheartedness, because this is pretty heavy. Look, the more I look at things, the more people I talk to across the country on a daily basis, the more information I get and the more concerned I get. The people I talk with in the alternative media, those I won't name, but names that you know, recognize, that 99% of the people who pay attention know, are saying the same thing. Look, there's something coming down the pike, and it's not good. It's not good. Where does this all stem from? You cannot take any part of this puzzle out of this maze of puzzle pieces and look at it by itself. This is one huge crime scene. And I want to address this to tell you how serious this is, and to tell you how serious they, the overlords, these perverse, Moloch-worshipping individuals are. I want to play you, and I don't know how many outside of New York City, the five boroughs, have seen this, a public service announcement. Have you seen this? Listen, watch this carefully. This was aired this weekend. Public service announcement for the five boroughs of New York City. On television, on radio, at various venues. And soon it'll be in the West Coast. This is what I'm getting. And in larger cities adapted to your city. You think that this is all just a bunch of conspiratorial nonsense that, hey, we can go living life. Oh, it's bad, but it's not that bad. It's really, you can't. The government is too incompetent to plan anything. Well, that's probably true at this point. Watch this. Public service announcement, New York City just released. No, it's not 1962. Here it is. The opening, of course, shows New York City, the buildings.
So there's been a nuclear attack. Don't ask me how or why. Just know that the big one has hit, okay? So what do we do? There are three important steps that I want you to remember. Step one, get inside fast. You, your friends, your family, get inside. And no, staying in the car is not an option. You need to get into a building and move away from the windows. Step two, stay inside. Shut all doors and windows. Have a basement? Head there. If you don't have one, get as far into the middle of the building as possible. If you were outside after the blast, get clean immediately. Remove and bag all outer clothing to keep radioactive dust or ash away from your body. Step three, stay tuned. Follow media for more information. Don't forget to sign up for Notify NYC for official alerts and updates. And don't go outside until officials say it's safe. All right, you've got this.
That, of course, is methods at the end to stay in contact in the event of a nuclear attack on New York City. So Look, you have to look at things like this. Eric the Tech, did you know about that PSA before this?
No.
Sorry to put you on the spot. I know you have to jump over equipment to get to the microphone. I appreciate that. If I can engage you in dialogue, are you surprised by that? Wires are going everywhere, or cables are going everywhere.
I don't know.
Yeah. That's typically, that's a typical response that I get from people that I've shown this to. Now, that's one of several PSAs. I'm not going to go through others, but there is another issue going on right now. This, by the way, this nuclear warning PSA is getting a lot of traction, and it's getting a lot of help from social media, and people in government agencies. In other words, what I'm saying is people are being directed to this PSA. But for what purpose? Are we to worry about a nuclear attack? And if so, why? What would prompt that? Obviously, people would look at the war in Ukraine, the NATO position against Russia, Ukraine. This has everything to do with the oligarchs' war in Ukraine. There was an article in America First, AmericaFirstReport.com. That's AmericaFirstReport.com. An article there that was published by Caitlin Johnstone on, well, it was published today, actually, three illuminating quotes about the war in Ukraine. And I saw this and I read it. And pretty much you and I, we know about pretty much all of this. Now, some of the people I don't agree with, I just don't agree with it in principle and ideology. But that's not to say the information is wrong, that they're, you can disagree all day long. If the information is correct, then that's something different. Now, the editor of this has a note at the beginning of this article saying that there are many ways in which I often disagree with Caitlin Johnstone. I absolutely respect her intellect and writing skill. And most of the time, I agree with her perspectives, but sometimes we diverge. On the issue of Ukraine, writes the editor of AmericaFirstReport.com, I agree with her wholeheartedly. Just as Americans woke up to the realities of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, I'm quoting this from this article. Opposing them eventually, despite widely approving of them in the beginning, so too do I hope more Americans will realize we're being sold a false narrative in order to get our dollars and potentially our troops over to one of the most corrupt countries in the world. Okay, I'm going to put I'll finish the editor's statement. I support the Ukrainian people and their plight, but we are far too involved in this regional conflict, thanks in large part to the propaganda and gaslighting. And then the editorial editor's notes that here's Caitlin, and then the article begins. Now, it's interesting because in my town, and I couldn't believe this as a side note, I purchased the Sunday paper. You know, always Sundays are big papers, right? I don't do that because I don't want to contribute to the mass media hysteria. I don't want to give them one dime of my money. But there was a reason I did that this Sunday. And to my dismay, I took the paper from the rack. I put it on the counter. And I was ready to get my $1.50 out for the big edition. And the cashier said, that'll be $4.50. $4.49. I said, there's only one paper here. I'm only buying one. And she said, yeah, $4.49. I said, what? For one paper? I had to buy the paper. And that's the worst investment I've made. Because look, I watch what I spend. Okay, but anyway, I watched as I spent that. I guess USA Today bought our paper. I don't know how many people in this area know that, but nonetheless, on the front page was this amazing story, and I didn't bring it here. I'm not going to give them any kind of publicity, but the plight of the Ukrainian people and how my town has taken Ukrainians, the refugees, in, and they've got it so bad, when in fact, as they're describing their lifestyle here in the United States, specifically in the city, my goodness, they have more than the average person, citizen of my town. They were given more. They were given a place to live, a house to live in. They were given transportation through various charities. They were nice transportation, actually. They were given subsidies for food and for other. Now, that's not to take away from the plight of the Ukrainian people. I'm just saying, look, this is a war of propaganda, and it also involves the refugees and resettlement, reshaping the population of our country. But I digressed there. But let's get back to the article, because there are three important quotes, and I want to give you all three. The principles here, again, I don't agree with some of these people. Some I don't agree with at all, but they say things that are correct. Well, you'll get the idea. Noam Chomsky, John Pilger, and Chris Hedges. This now is the article from the author, Caitlin Johnstone, have lent their expertise to the subject of the war in Ukraine with some recent comments that help bring some much-needed clarity to an often confusing and always contentious issue, and here they are. This by John Pilger. I've spent my career working in the mainstream, and I've covered probably 7, 8, 9 shooting wars. I've never seen coverage so utterly consumed by a tsunami of jingoism and of manipulative jingoism as this one. Okay. Yes, there is a narrative. There is really kind of a sales pitch built into this. And you can see the brainwashing, especially if you look at different forums. People have Ukrainian flags. I stand with Ukraine. Ukrainian avatars and so on and so forth. You get the idea. Moving along quickly. Noam Chomsky writes this, states this. It's quite interesting that in American discourse, it's almost obligatory to refer to the invasion as the unprovoked invasion of Ukraine. Look it up on Google. Better yet, don't, because you're not going to find anything of truth except for recipes and on Google. You'll find hundreds of thousands of hits. Of course, it was provoked. Otherwise, they wouldn't refer to it all the time as an unprovoked invasion. Let me state that again. It is quite interesting that in American discourse, it's almost obligatory to refer to the invasion as the unprovoked invasion of Ukraine. Of course, it was provoked. It was provoked. And who was doing the, who was the provocateur? It was America. It was NATO. Who had their mitts? Which politicians have their mitts in Ukraine as a money laundering operation? Here's the short answer. Most of them. From Biden, that's Joe, his brother Jim, his son Hunter, and all, quite a few politicians. Ukraine is a big money laundering operation. And the people of Ukraine are suffering. by the way, Ukraine has a lot of neo-Nazi components that are being fought by Russia. So the people who are saying, well, you know, I'm anti-fascist, I'm anti-Nazi. Well, hold on a second, because a portion of Ukraine is operated by the Nazis. You want to call them Nazis 2.0? I don't care which one. But it's that fascist Nazi ideology. But this was provoked by NATO. This was provoked by the West. This is an intelligence operation designed to facilitate what? Say it with me, the Great Reset. They're going to shove this Great Reset down our throats. That involves climate change and lockdowns quicker than, I'm telling you right now, it's coming. This is the reason, part of the reason, I should say, for the fertilizer shortage, because the out of Ukraine comes the nitrogen. I'm not going to get too deep into that, but understand that while the United States could be self-sufficient, we have been dependent upon certain imports, including the fertilizer in many commercial cases that originate in Ukraine. And most of that goes to Peru, by the way. But I'm not going to get into that at that level. But the need, writes the author of this piece, the need of the political media class to continually blast the phrase unprovoked invasion over and over and over again in itself is itself a confession that they know they're not telling the whole truth. It is the imperial propaganda version of this classic tweet. And this is from November 20th, 2013. Note the date, because this has been brewing, by Mike Ginn, G-I-N-N. My, quote, not involved in human trafficking, end quote, t-shirt has people asking a lot of questions already answered by my shirt. Now, Chomsky outlines the many provocations of U.S. NATO power structure engaged in prior conflict, which countless Western analysts spent years warning was coming as a result of the provocative action that were already being taken by the empire. The invasion could easily have been prevented with a little diplomacy and some low-cost, high-reward concessions like honoring the Minsk agreements in providing assurances of neutrality for Ukraine, but they chose provocation and escalation instead. So when you look at this, folks, please look at this and understand. Ukraine is one piece of this bigger mosaic of this Great Reset. This is like this machine that is turning. It almost has a life of its own. It does actually have a life of its own, but this is one big integral part of this. And from this, what are we seeing? The elements of the Great Reset include depopulation, correct? Yes. Okay. So now, all of a sudden, we're getting PSAs about nuclear bombs going off and what to do in the event of a nuclear attack. Huh. People in New York have sent me emails saying, have you seen this? What's this about? But none of this is being covered by the mainstream media. No, it's all this unprovoked Russia bad invasion of Ukraine has nothing to do with Klaus Schwab, has nothing to do with the party of Davos or the World Economic Forum or the Great Reset or the fact that we're all going to be eating bugs. None of this has anything to do with or the plandemic, this, which, by the way, I'm going to say this right now. Something changed in the past several days. You are going to be seeing more and more and more reports of infections of SARS-CoV-2 in the form of the strain BA.5 that will usher in additional mask-wearing mandates and lockdowns. Every doctor to a T to the person I spoke to said, do not capitulate. Do not wear any mask. Do not capitulate. Do not subjugate yourself. Cooperate with lockdowns. Don't. That's an entire different story. But this is, again, this is another piece of that mosaic. Okay. Now, by the way, Russia is not blameless in this. We get that. Klaus Schwab, hey, Putin was one of Klaus Schwab's students. Let's not forget that, in addition to many Westerners. Now, Chris Hedges, this is probably the one statement I agree with the most. And this is what brought me, what prompted me to bring forth that video PSA. At no time, including the, this is from Chris Hedges now. At no time, including the Cuban Missile Crisis, have we stood closer to the precipice of nuclear war. Chris Hedges. Wait a second. I thought Donald Trump was going to take us into nuclear war. What happened? What happened? No. No, it's the puppet Biden. And I got emails and requests for this. In case you haven't seen this, I asked Eric to do this, put this together, okay? To show you what a moron, moron is too good of a word. What a, to show you what elder abuse looks like, to show you how bad things are. You've heard about it. You've probably seen it. I'm going to have Eric play two back-to-back clips. One is the gaffe by Joe Biden. And then a follow-up, which, again, reminded me of the follow-up video. If you're visually impaired, you can listen. You'll get the idea. If not, you can see it. You can watch it on screen. Here's the first one, Joe Biden, recent gaffe. This, again, this is all connected, and I'll wrap it up here momentarily. Here it is.
Writes, and I quote, women, I'm just a quote now from the majority, women are not without electoral or political power. It is noteworthy that the percentage of women who registered to vote and cast a ballot is consistently higher than the percentage of the men who do so. End of quote. Repeat the line. Women are not without electoral and or political or maybe precise, not and or political.
Did you get that? Okay, the amount of time the White House spent to control the damage from that quote was impressive. To me, I was impressed. The White House spokesman, I don't know, 5-6 tweets said, oh no, he didn't say that. He didn't say repeat the line. He said, let me repeat the line. The response by those who really understand that we're not stupid was this. Here's this one.
Well, that's going to do it for all of us here at Channel 4 News. You stay classy, San Diego. I'm Ron Burgundy.
Damn it! Who typed a question mark on the teleprompter? For the last time, anything you put on that prompter, Burgundy will read.
Well, there you have it. That's kind of making fun of that. That was a fun, funny movie. But this is what we have. So if Biden isn't running things, and Heels Up Harris isn't running things, who's running things? Who's making these decisions? Well, obviously, Obama, who never really left Washington. His presence is still there, Valerie Jarrett. And, of course, if we can put up the picture, because this comes into play extremely, it's extremely critical. This is a cover of the New York Post. And you might think, well, this is old news. This is about just one thing. It's not about this. The New York Post picture you see on your screen for the people, again, visually impaired, driving or whatever. Spies who lie. And the subtitle of this is the intelligence experts who falsely discredited Hunter Biden's laptop and still won't say sorry. All right. You want to know who's running things? Yeah, granted, these people are out of their positions, but the influence that they have still exists as part of a supporting infrastructure, especially in the media. Now, there are people currently in the IC, both in the U.S. and essentially all throughout the West, who are calling the shots in conjunction with the party of Davos and such, which is why. And again, I'm going to hurry this along. What are we seeing right now in the United States? We're seeing political prisoners being housed in Washington, D.C. They're not getting out. We should get them out, period. You're seeing Stuart Rhodes, by the way, excellent, excellent interview with Stuart Rhodes on with Harrison Smith yesterday at band.video. Absolutely excellent. Stuart Rhodes from prison stating that, look, they're going after Trump. There will be a criminal indictment against President Trump. There will be a criminal indictment. Now, that's what he said. Do I believe that? 100%. Because their objective is to stop President Trump at all costs for 2024. They cannot have him run. And there will be criminal indictments. And let me tell you, I'll put the link in the program description box at HagmanReport.com. I'm going to tell you, the January 6th illegitimate committee, which should have no judiciary power because of its illegitimacy and the fact that it's unconstitutional, are going after people like, well, any, if you were at the Capitol, you think I haven't been contacted yet. You're dead wrong. They're coming for you. If you were at the Capitol, let me say this again. If you were at the Capitol on January 6th, or you supported someone at the Capitol, and I can say this from personal experience, look in my eyes right now. They're coming for you. They want to destroy you. This is not a Republican thing, Democrat thing. This is a big lie. Let's go quickly, because again, that's another piece of this mosaic. Chaos is the word of the day. But when they start knocking your doors down, when they start pulling the plugs on broadcasts, when they start taking your friend, family member into custody, you're going to remember these words. I want to play this because Steve Bannon is scheduled for trial next week. And you have to understand too that this is so wrong. Those who lived through the Watergate and remember the Watergate hearings, I was a young man at that time, and really understand what happened in Watergate. Well, this doesn't even compare. It has no comparison whatsoever. None, zero. Watergate, with the exception of this, Watergate was conducted to take Nixon out for a specific purpose. Again, I don't care if you like Nixon, hate him, but what they did to Nixon, the only commonality here, aside from some of the players, where they're related, the FBI and CIA, aside from some of the player agencies, it's different. But Bannon's is scheduled for trial next week. But since President Trump let go of the executive privilege, well, you know, I'm going to let Jack Posobiec, again, a friend of mine and a friend of the program, Jack has got really some good information on this. What's going to happen with this, with January 6th and Steve Bannon? Here are the thoughts of Jack Posobiec, Human Events. Here's like a 2-minute excerpt. Go ahead, watch this.
We'll post the letter up. It's up at postmillennial.com. and go read it for yourselves. We obtained it. What it states is President Trump had initially directed Steve to exercise executive privilege. And what that meant was, because the conversations that were held between President Trump and Steve Bannon took place during the time that Trump was still president, right? That they fell under executive privilege, right? That was their legal view. So Bannon, when he gets that subpoena from the Jan 6 committee, says, look, I can't come because this is executive privilege. And the president has asked me not to speak, not to talk to you guys, because he knew that those conversations were exactly what the Jan 6 committee was going to ask about. So they filed charges on him. Trial begins in 1 week. But Trump sends the letter because he's sitting there watching Hutchinson, the Hutch. Remember the Hutch? You guys remember the Hutch? We all love the Hutch. She's up there lying her hutch off. And these people are all just lapping it up. The media is spreading it all over the place. And so Trump says, you know what? I want one of my guys in there. Let's get Bannon in. Sends the letter to Bannon, says, you can go testify. Bannon's lawyer response says, we will testify and we want it to be public. We want it to be public. Now, the question for the Jan 6 committee is, will they allow it to be public? And then furthermore, that sets up the legal argument for Bannon's lawyers to go into that court and say, now hold on a second. You guys slapped contempt of Congress on us. You filed charges. The DOJ decided to push that forward. We ended up testifying after executive privilege was waived. That's what this was all about. What are we still doing here? So potentially you're going to see a motion either to A, or you'll probably see all of these motions, right? To drop the charges, to extend the deadline, to push the trial back, or even to sit there and look, even if, now let's say the judge says no to all of it. Say the judge says no to every single piece of that. You still would have a situation where Steve would be able to go in there, his lawyers would be able to go in there, and he would be able to say, look, I had a legal argument in front of the committee. The committee didn't appreciate it. They went to the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice didn't listen to me. I ended up testifying as I always intended to do. The issue for me was executive privilege. And then we'll see what a jury says about that. That being said, I'm going to say it right now, right? And I'd say this on War Room too. A DC jury is not going to give a guy with the name of Steve Bannon the benefit of the doubt. The same way they wouldn't give Jack Posobiec the benefit of the doubt. And the same way that definitely would not give a guy with the name of Donald J. Trump the benefit of the doubt. That's just the way it works.
Okay. Thank you, Jack. And indeed, that's what this is all about. They are destroying lives. They are incarcerating people who have opposing political or actually moral and spiritual ideology. And that includes that includes Liz Cheney. That includes Benny Thompson, who's conflicted out the wazoo for these show trial. That's why they had to have a Hollywood producer take the elements of the testimony and package them as a movie production for consumption by the mainstream media. So everything you're seeing from the J6 committee, illegitimate as it is a Hollywood production. Understand that. It's wrong. And that's why Stuart Rhodes said, look, I'll testify. Put me out. I'll testify on one condition, live in front of a television audience, unedited. You think he's going to get that? No. Do you think they care? No. They're coming after you. They're coming after me. They're coming after every one of us. I'm telling you this, and they're going to use the lockdowns. They're going to use the threat and perhaps even nuclear war from the PSA, like you saw. They're going to use everything is on the table. But understand, it's all working together. All right. I don't want to take any time away from Standale, standale.com. Before I get to Stan, I just want to tell you, I want to thank my fine friends at Lightstream. I'm going to tell you something. You talk about helping others save money. They're doing it right now, every single day. I want you to hop on board on this. Have you ever looked at your credit card statement and been shocked by the interest rate? Did you know that you could actually roll all of your high interest credit card debt into one monthly payment at a lower fixed interest rate? Well, you can. Yep, you can. Folks, lower your interest rate and save with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. Rates start at 5.73% APR with AutoPay and excellent credit. And you know what? The rate's fixed, so it's never going to go up over the life of the loan. And, you know, you can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and there are absolutely no fees. Sometimes you can get it the same day you apply. LightStream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. Now, just for my listeners and viewers, apply now to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Hagman. I'm going to spell it for you. That's LightStream.com/Hagman, lightstream.com/Hagman. That's HAGMANN, two N's on Hagman. Subject to credit approval, rates range from 5.73% APR to 19.99% APR and include a 0.50% autopay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply. Offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Hagman. Boy, that's important. lightstream.com/Hagman for more information. You'll thank me later. You're going to be glad you did this. Again, I got people saving hundreds of dollars a month and using that extra discretionary income to pay down other debt as well as to prep. And speaking of prep, I can't think of no other person to talk to about prep and things that are happening in the world today than Stan Dale, standale.com. He is the guy that offers all sorts of things from his intellectual products. Hey, Garden of Eden, you want to know where it is? That guy will tell you. Dare to Prepare from Holly. Oh, man, that is the encyclopedia of preparation. That's the only book you need about preparation, in my view. EMP Shield, EMPShield.com. I'm going to tell you something. People, these are flying off the shelves. EMPShield.com. Code Hagman for $50 off. How about New York City? How about the PSA? Stan, did you happen to see the PSA about the nuclear attack from New York City? Did you happen to see that?
Stan? Yeah, I kind of had a chuckle. I've got it a link to it on my show images page in slide 38.
What do you think?
There are so many things wrong with what they told people to do that I can't even begin to tell you. But, you know, like, they're saying, okay, when you had a nuclear attack, not beforehand, but when you had a nuclear attack, it's time to get inside and take off your radiation-dusted clothes and put them in a bag and right. Go to the center of the house. Okay, I mean, you know, and keep listening for announcements from your government. With what? You know, do you have a radio that works? I mean, you know, they're just, anyway. It's interesting that they put out this public service announcement, you know, in case of an attack, a nuclear attack on New York City. If they attack New York City, the Russians or the Chinese or the Iranians, even the Iranians would probably do it with a EMP type bomb, a low yield. But if the Russians did it, which is the most likely villain, the bomb would absolutely decimate New York City. There won't be anything left but burning rubble. Anyway, it's an effort for the government there in New York City to say, look, don't worry. If you get hit by a nuclear attack and survive and everything, here's what you do and things will be okay. It's nice and rosy. They're just trying to let people know that there's possibility of a nuclear attack, but not to worry.
Yeah. You know what went through my head? Just as a personal anecdote here, when I responded to a fresh homicide or a homicide scene that somebody who had been dead for quite a while, okay, and I was in this enclosed room, and let me tell you something, okay, it was pungent. So, okay, when I got back to my apartment, I all I could smell. And on my clothes, I mean, it clung to your clothes. So you make this mistake once. You go inside to take your clothes off, right? No, you won't do it again. You stay outside, take your clothes off, and you can use that to consider the radiation on your clothes from a nuclear blast like you were referencing, which was incorrect information. Don't go inside, take them off outside. But okay.
Oh, well, anyway, I mean, they might have meant outside, but they didn't say it clearly. But it's just silliness. I mean, people should have been prepared for this long before the event, not after the event. That's just the craziness of it. Anyway.
Well, yeah. I don't want to take any of your time up because I know you've got a lot of stuff, but I'm going to thank you for being, I know I screwed up the program clock, but that was just me. It was, hey, it's my dog's birthday day. Leave me alone.
Hey.
Eight years old.
A new bone today?
A new bone today.
Excellent.
Yep. And she is, a new bone today. Go ahead, sir.
Like a dog on a bone. Yep. That's right. Anyway. Oh, okay. Well, let's see here. There were a number of things that came up early this evening that I didn't have time to put up on the show images page. I'm trying to figure out, Eric, are you able to go to a website and show it on the screen or not?
Oh, he can do anything. Stan, the guy can do anything. Yes.
Otherwise, I'd show it, I'd do a share screen and I'd show you this image of the sun that's just come out on Space Weather.
Let me just explain this. We have some broadcasting interference capability or broadcasting. It doesn't work. I guess that bottom line, the sharing stuff doesn't work with our broadcasting software. So,
all right. Well, go to spaceweather.com. All one word, spaceweather.com.
All right. I can see his fingers typing away there. There it is.
Okay, now slide down to that picture of the sun and click on it. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, have you got it up there? Okay, yeah. Now, these are magnetic filaments. And say that one down in the lower left side of the left image there. That was taken, I think, yesterday. And then the one on the right is today. That black arc down there is the distance that light would travel in 1 second. It's how long it is. The Earth would be a little dot down there that you could hardly see in comparison to the size. These things are erupting all over the surface of the sun. Now, this is, in my opinion, telling us that the sun is unstable. And in fact, if you go back to the article over there on Space Weather, the sun is peppered with large sunspots. One look at the solar disk, however, reveals something even bigger. There are several huge filaments of magnetism. And then you look down under the picture, it said, these structures are irregular tubes of magnetism holding masses of plasma above the surface of the sun. They look dark because they're cooler than the underlying star, relatively cooler.
I remember solar, from high school, the speed of light, just to give you an idea of the magnitude, it's what, 186,000 miles a second, right?
Roughly, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's diminishing with time, of course, as you follow
right
what Satterfield says. But anyway, on that page, solar magnetic filaments are famously unstable. And look at how many we've got all at once. However, these have held themselves together for days. If one eventually erupts, it could hurl debris. Not just radiation, debris toward the Earth. Now, what I've been telling you guys, watch out. It's the sun is unstable. This underscores it. And as I said, I didn't have time to get it into the show images page before showtime. I just went back to check Space Weather again, and wow. So, what we'll do now, Eric, is we'll go to slide 51 as a segue to that. And slide 51 shows Space Weather yesterday. And here it says, active sun, spoiler alert, something on the sun is about to explode. Well, gosh, it's kind of like Stanley's been telling you this, watch out for things on the sun. And even though they don't know how it's going to explode, the fact that today they reported all these magnetic prominences, these long strands on the surface of the sun, holding plasma up above the surface of the sun. We're approaching the time, I'd say, before this solar cycle is over, when it's going to blow off a chunk of the surface of the sun is going to throw off a lot of the thin film of the chromosphere. There is an incredible looking sunspot crossing the center of the solar disk, and a new large disk core has just appeared on the limb. Now, these things are rapidly growing, these sunspots. I mean, and that's the day before. That was yesterday. So today, you saw the pictures there. on space weather of what is now attending these sunspots, is these magnetic filaments just erupting off the surface of the sun and hanging there, and they haven't gone away, which they should do normally. For a couple of days they've been there. Anyway, it's kind of like I told you so. Watch out. It's a time to be sure you got an EMP shield as quick as you can. If you got one and haven't hooked it up, hook it up now, because a solar EMP cause thing is the worst kind you can have. It's many times worse than a nuclear EMP. That nuclear EMP will certainly zap all your electronics and stuff if you haven't got an EMP shield. But the thing you want to prevent is fire in the wall of your house from a solar one that lasts for hours. That's a problem. With an EMP shield, it takes it straight to ground. And you need to protect your house from burning down in addition to your electronics. Anyway, that's just sharing what I've kind of been telling you is coming. I had a gut feeling that we were going to see something happening, and it's in the process right now. And I don't know how long this will be before it quietens down again. But this solar cycle, I'm pretty sure, will see some drastic things from the sun. I think it's going to fulfill prophecy written in what John wrote in the book of Revelation. It's anyway, that's
a pretty big statement there, but I get that.
Well, you know how I am with big statements. I like to make a big splash.
But I think I think it's warranted. Looking at those pictures, that's pretty sobering.
Go to slide 37 on this, and this is a snap I took last night of the magnetic field lines coming off of the sun. Now, the click on the picture first. You see the green magnetic field lines, the current north pole of the sun, and the purple ones are the current south pole of the sun. They're skewed a bit off center, and that's because the angle we are at the sun at the moment. But the thing I see here is more and more lines, white lines, crossing the equatorial region of the sun and joining sunspots in the northern hemisphere, sunspots in the southern hemisphere. And that, of course, I've been saying this is unusual. And you can see it from the right side of the picture to the left. There are strands joining across the equator and tugging on the surface of the sun, pulling it together on this side, which stretches the other side. If you click now, Eric, on the text of slide 37, did I do it the right way there? Let me just see. I probably didn't. Oh, I thought I was. No, I was going to put a link to the site where I get this, but if you need it, I can supply it later. But this is the thing that's updated constantly and showing the magnetic field position on the sun. Now go over to slide 42. Now, again, this was taken yesterday. It's a high resolution photo of the sun with those magnetic fields so you can see it clearer. Okay. I think this is in the 90 angstrom wavelength, I think. Yeah. All right. I don't know whether this is still the the huge size image. I tried to scale this down. I don't know whether I actually uploaded it to help you guys or not. But, and then go over to slide 40. This is all on the sun right now. Yeah. One of the major issues of today. Now, in slide 40 there, you'll see that is a current ultraviolet, extreme ultraviolet image of the sun, that one where we can see about two-thirds of the sun's surface. Now, at the bottom of the image, you see the 10th of July. That was 2 days ago. And then at the top is the 11th, which is a day after that, yesterday. And the reason I did this was to show you, you can compare. You can see the white spots, the active regions there. See how fast they are moving at the equatorial regions. Look at the picture on the bottom, the two bright spots on the left, and then look at the top picture, two bright spots. They're over at one of them's at about 59 degrees when it was at about, at about 60 minus, what is that? It was at minus 75, now it's at about minus 59. So it's moved that far in one day. Just to give you an idea how fast things, when it's facing us, can move. And you can even see signs of those filaments and things in these dark strings, dark strands in the picture. Boy, amazing stuff. Amazing stuff.
Looking at it that way, that again, it's sobering to see what's going on with the sun, but I think prophetic is perhaps the more accurate term.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely prophetic. Another thing here, in Texas, the heat from the sun, we're seeing this all over the planet, strange cycles in the climate or the weather, where we're seeing extreme heating and some extreme rainfall in places now where it's very dry. I am certain that because of changes in our magnetic field of the Earth and with output from the sun, especially in the ultraviolet region, that we are seeing more and more heat, especially across our crop areas. But down here in Texas, click on the picture and click on the picture, and you'll see the temperatures they're seeing up to 111 down toward the coast there. That's reasonably hot. And the fact that it's so hot means that everybody's going to be using air conditioning. So the Texas government has asked people, not told them yet, but asked them, please conserve power during these times of day, because, you know, you're going to blow the grid. We can't supply the power needed to cool everybody off. It's that hot. Now, I expect this will get worse. We've done things down there with Austin, Texas, a few other cities, trying to get them to prepare for the EMP that we're expecting from the sun. But that doesn't help you with the heat. If you slip from slide 39 up to slide 41, that shows you the index for today for the ultraviolet penetration of the United States. And normally the ultraviolet is at its highest, it's down toward the equator. And you can see that in these global maps of it. They show a strip going across the equator around the planet, and that's where the high ultraviolet is. But you can see that that's moving up because the tip of Florida, you know, has got a 12, which is above extreme. And the 11s, as you see in the map, they're all up through, you know, Colorado, the four states, you know, Southern California, all of Texas. And this adds to the problem. It's producing all kinds of ultraviolet, and ultraviolet C, which is harmful to your skin and makes you ill, physically ill. That increases when we see this ultraviolet penetration. So I don't know if I've got a link to the map. Yes, down in the text, if you click on the text, that will keep apprising you of the situation. And it's from the National Weather Service, from NOAA. So go there every day and check on it to see. If you're out in the sun between 10 and 4 p.m. when it's like this, wear eye protection like crazy, a hat, heavy sunscreen, because it's bad for your skin, and it's going to get worse, I think, as the sun does whatever it's doing right now to the extreme. Bad stuff. Bad stuff. Anyway, I was just impressed with all these things happening, all related to the sun, all related to the sun. The other part of what I'm doing here today is looking at images coming in from the James Webb Telescope, which is in orbit around the sun. But I'll get to that in a minute, because that has a lot of pretty things to look at and marvelous things. And we'll get to that in a second. I'm going to go up to slide 52. Why your professing Christian friends have become LGBTQ allies. There are, of course, several reasons why many professing Christians are embracing LGBTQ ideology. Satan has devised many schemes to lead us into apostasy. With that in mind, although all people who support LGBTQ the ideology do so for the same reason, people can commit the same sin from different temptations. I'm not sure I understand why they said that, but many professing Christians have become allies with the LGBTQ people because many of their friends and family have become members of that community. Now, that's an interesting point. You know, you've got a family member that becomes, you know, one of these strange sexual deviants, is all I can say about it. And you love them, but, you know, you have to kind of distance and say, I can't support what you're doing. That's going to be hard if it's your son or your relatives, your best friends, and that kind of stuff. And so a lot of Christians, rather than, you know, face it head on with their friends who've gone weird like this and tell them they're in the wrong and they should stop, are just you know, saying, well, okay, that's what they're choosing. I still love them. And, you know, it's okay. You got to stand up and say, it's not right. And it is wiping out, you know, the moral basis for the United States. In fact, it's pretty much wiped out 90% of it, I'm sure. So when you click on this, it gets over to the all the regions of why people, you know, accept it. And it's a subtle trap. You know, well, look, my Christian friend endorses me. I'm an LGBTQ fellow or lady or whatever, or it. And, you know, Christian friends, you know, support me. So that makes it okay. So this is what you got to look at. You got to stand up individually. You got to act against this kind of stuff. Fight the sin. I know it's difficult. I've known, you know, when I was in Australia, I've known one family, close associates, that their son was definitely a homosexual, you know, very strong in that persuasion. So I know how difficult it is to say, you know, I can love the sinner, hate the sin, but that's what you got to do. You know, anyway.
Well, I think that this is all part of the great takedown, the great reset, the great delusion, where academia has been a part of it, media has been a part of it, and now churches infiltrated by these people who believe that there's no sin in the activity, when in fact the Bible is pretty clear on this, and it's a lifestyle choice. People will say, well, people are born that way. You know, this new science, just very briefly, follow the science. Well, you know, no, it's not there's no scientific basis that I have seen that convinces me that same sex attraction is anything but a lifestyle choice, period. And that's just me. Okay. That's my opinion. But for the larger sense, I believe you're right. And I think that for churches to embrace this itself is a sin, and it's blaspheming God. It's an affront to God. But again, I'll be quiet now.
Well, that's all right. I mean, look, I don't know how you would handle it in a church. I mean, what do you do? Do you say you're a sinner? You have to sit on that side of the church, or you know, do you give them communion? I mean, it's a difficult situation, but you can't support the sin. You can support, you know, the sinner and say, we love you, but you have to change your ways. That's difficult. It's got to be done.
If someone is outspoken about abortion, which is an entirely different subject, or infanticide, they are prohibited in some parishes from receiving, in some places from receiving communion. Would that not be the same for this? Because the affront to God is not dissimilar, but, I'm just asking, I don't know.
You know, look, there may be people born with a hormonal imbalance, which makes them more feminine, more masculine than their gender would imply. And these are situations where medicines should be used to help them, you know, be what they should be, testosterone or your hormones, female hormones or whatever. But they have to be looked at as a person with a sickness that needs to be treated. It's not normal. And then in the animal kingdom, you do see it happening, but it means that species is not reproducing as fast as it should, because the same-sex animals are having sex with each other, and that's not producing any babies. God put us here to multiply on the face of the earth, to make lots of humans, you know, human souls. And when you deny this, you're going against his command, his command in Genesis to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth, you know. And that's for the souls that he's going to harvest, and that time is coming very soon, I'm afraid. But anyway, I guess I'm pounding on this too hard, but it's just such a difficult issue that needs to be addressed.
You know, I appreciate you addressing it because a lot of people would shy away from that topic. And I think that that's something that we should not shy away from, that we should stand in our beliefs and honor God, honor the commandments, honor what God tells us. So thank you for being, for standing in that gap.
You know, yesterday and earlier today, I got a call from a guy named Scott down in Guatemala. He's one of your listeners, and he listens to all kinds of the Watchmen shows. And he said to me, he said, you know, look, I like listening to you guys and all the guests on the show and everything. He said, but what, now he's an evangelist type guy that goes all over the world. And he said, what kind of concerns me is that you guys spend a lot of time on news items, but you forget to mention the salvation, you know, how you can be recovered from sin and how you can be assured to live, you know, an everlasting life when you die. And you never cover that. So, you know, I thought, well, I guess he's right. You and I have talked about that off air. How do you do it without, you know, sounding all churchy and stuff like that? But if you look at my book, The Cosmic Conspiracy, and that was back in 1978 that I first published that. And I've not changed the first 200 pages. They remain intact. And there's information on every page that fits a code that I put into the whole book. But on page 127, 127, is a place for people to read and sign a declaration of their belief and support of Jesus Christ as their Messiah, their Savior. And so I put that up there. It's in between slide 52 and 54. It has no number on it because it's rather timeless. And it, speaking of time, time is running out for people to make a decision because the world is coming apart so quickly that a lot of people are going to die that haven't already died from sickness and war. And you may be one of those. So time is running out for you to make a decision, whichever way you want to go with God, with Jesus as the Messiah, accept the bloody sacrifice for you or not. But if you do, do it quickly because time is running out. You can click on that thing, have you signed page 127 yet? And you can see what I wrote back in 1978. And that's been my thrust in being a watchman on the wall all that time. Whether it be in a lecture or a show or whatever, page 127 is the message. And people should do that if they haven't already. So I'm just putting it up there. I may put it up there for a few weeks running just to remind people, you better understand what it's all about and how short time is. I don't think a lot of us, you know, look at, well, I might die before my age out. There might be a riot, there might be a civil war, there might be an invasion by Russia, China, and Iran, might be a nuclear attack on my city. People kind of block it out of their mind, but they need to make that decision. I promise you, having been out of my body and out there, you know, near death experience, it is real and it's a good place. So you want to be there. So please think about it. Anyway, enough of my.
Well, I think that that's what, you know what, that's the big uniter of all of us. If you're, thank you, Scott, by the way, in Guatemala. Thank you, because I think that that's, at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. Look, I could die in my sleep. We could die in our sleep tonight. Who knows? Or get hit by a bus or have Eric take us out. You know, I mean, I don't know. But that's really all that matters at the end of the day. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, over in the Middle East, that, you know, my favorite candidate for Antichrist or false prophet, I think Antichrist works, but anyway, is Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Now, in slide 49, there's an article telling about this guy arresting a couple of relatives, and one of them is MBN, Mohammed bin Nayef, which is his cousin. He was allegedly supposed to take the position of the King Salman when he dies, but instead King Salman appointed his son as kind of the overseer of the country, obviously grooming him to be king of Saudi Arabia. So then Salman arrests him, goes through his house, searching everything, puts him in jail, and accuses him of treason, which is punishable by death or life in prison. So he is now making moves that tell you he is strong. He is a dictator. And even though he's made interesting changes to Islam regarding women and various rights that they didn't have, they now do have, he's gaining popular support in the young people in Saudi Arabia. And he's now confident enough in his position to start executing or imprisoning people that are potential rivals to his power. So he's consolidating. He's getting ready for something. Now, over in slide 50, I don't know whether you saw this. It's been all over the TV, your news and Fox and stuff. But there is a former spy for Mohammed bin Salman in his country. And he goes on to this interview here. His name is Saad al-Jabri. He warned that Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, also known as MBS, was a killer with infinite resources, lots of money and people and things like that. And if you look at the interview, I think that if you click on that, let me see what happens. You click on that. Yeah. You go to the article, and there may be more a video of that later in that article. Anyway, he calls him a psychopath, and his family and children, I think he's gotten them out. I think he escaped through Canada or something about 5 years ago. But it's just telling you that it's not our imagination. Mohammed bin Salman is dangerous, really dangerous. Is he going to be a prince for much longer? I mean, his dad is sick. He's been in hospital several times. I might still be there under care. And as long as he's a prince, if he signs the Abraham Accords, I think that we can call that an agreement, a covenant between nations to get along with Israel. If he signs that, he could be the prince of the covenant as spoken of in prophecy. So again, you know, my instincts have been pretty much right watching this guy. There are others that could take the scene from Turkey later, but right now this seems to be the major bad guy. Keep an eye on him.
Yeah.
Now, earlier today, I spent a lot of my time. I didn't get a lot of stories for the Show Images page because I was having fun.
Good.
Yeah, I was tied into the live stream broadcast at NASA for the images, the stream of images coming from the James Webb telescope in orbit around the sun. It's a super high resolution telescope using infrared, and the pictures are so many times greater, you know, accuracy and crispness of anything we had before, that I was sitting there with everybody else around the planet. I mean, they had Israel hooked in. They had Canada, New Zealand. They had everybody hooked in, audiences everywhere, watching for this because it's such an important discovery to be able to see further than we have ever seen with this telescope. Now, let's see where to start with these. I don't know that you can see the live broadcast replayed. They may do it. I had a link up earlier today. Let's see. In slide 41, click on the text that's yellow there. And right. It just was telling people how to hook in and link to the live stream camera. You could click on it there. And if you click on it from that site, it takes you what's live now. And they're digesting, I'm sure, what happened. But you can backtrack this thing. Let me see, how far can we go back? Oh, yeah. Yeah, it looks like right now. Yeah, maybe the edge of that live broadcast. I'm sure they must have saved it somewhere because it was just so cool to see everybody explaining what we were seeing and why it's important. Like, to be able to see that far into space, Holly was just she was wanting to know if I was still on air because it was a different time. Sorry about that, guys. Where was I here? Yeah. They say that they can see as far back as everybody's trying to interrupt today. Let me hang up here. Sorry.
No worries.
They can look out to when the universe was only about, 400 million years old, I think. They say 400 million years. Anyway, the thing is that they're using the standard time, you know, like the universe is 15 billion years old, and so they can see out 400 billion years. They're getting closer to the Big Bang in age. So that basically all these galaxies and stars you see out there, oh, goodness gracious.
If it's for me, I'm not here. I'm kidding, of course, but...
Yeah.
You know what?
I'm going to put this in a drawer just a second here.
I was looking at that live stuff, and I'll tell you what, that was pretty doggone impressive. I spent some time there today.
Okay,
just all right. Just looking at that.
Now, in slide 43, Webb's image covers a patch of sky, approximately the size of a grain of sand held at arm's length by someone on the ground, and reveals thousands of galaxies in a tiny sliver of vast universe. Now, if you imagine a grain of sand in between your fingertips like that and stretch it way out in front of you, and that part of the sky is what they imaged in this shot that you see in slide 43. That, and there's so many galaxies and in that shot that when you say, how many grains of sand held at arm's length like that would it take to cover what I can see? And that's just on this side of the planet. I mean, we're so infinitesimally small. When you look at all this, you just have to wonder that we are even able to see and do these things. But by the grace of God, we're here with a soul that God has given us and a mind so that we can start to understand the vastness of his creation. And it is not 15 billion years old. You know, Satterfield's figures on the speed of the light and how that using that speed of light as it is today was a way that they incorrectly calculated the age of the universe. And the universe is like, you know, measured in thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands at most, years, by adjusting the speed of the light to a curve, you know, from the Big Bang till now. Anyway, if you click on, well, whichever you want to do, if you click on the picture, you'll get a link to the NASA page, and you'll see there, you know, what of the picture there of that shot. But I suggest you click on the bottom part of that slide 43 down where it says high resolution image, and click here and look at this image. I'm going to talk to you about it. When you get that up, Eric, with the word here in that slide, there you go. Now, if you look carefully, you'll see in the middle where that bright star with the six, you know, rays coming out from it, right just south of it, just a little bit to the tip of one of those stars, you see a cluster of galaxies. And they are so, the gravitational field of these combined galaxies is so immense that it's bending light in space, like Einstein said it would happen, and I support that. You'll see curvature in the galaxies. They're stretched as though they were in a magnifying glass around that center of galaxies there. And that's called gravitational lensing, because it's like a lens. It bends the light and magnifies things, you know, and distorts them by the virtue of this strong magnetic field affecting space-time, as Einstein would say. But I maintain that space is a fluid. And therefore, what we're seeing here is a very strong a gravitational field from these galaxies that is a dynamic field. And it is causing the fluid of space to be distorted, the density of it to change by virtue of the gravity of these things. I just looked at this and, you know, you see these red galaxies, you know, the little tiny things, if you look at the top and at the bottom, they're very old. And, science with this telescope is allowing us to reach out further than we ever have. And it is in an effort by the scientific community to find out the truth about the Big Bang, the creation. And as I wrote in a later edition of the Cosmic Conspiracy, in fact, it was even the first edition, about the beginning, how God had nothingness out here in our universe. And then he spoke the word into creation, and this vibration of the words he spoke, whatever language, however he did it, went out into this void and caused eddies to form, high speed, high density eddies that spun around and started to form, you know, molecules, you know, atoms, molecules, and then clusters of them, all from the word he spoke vibrating out through this firmament here, you know, through the void. And when you put that in your mind as to how strong that might have been, I take you back to how many grains of sand held at arm's length would it take to cover the sky that you see both night and day, and realize it's filled with these galaxies like this. And hence, of course, your planets and moons and things like that. But all from one spoken word into the void, and creation happened. The Big Bang occurred. And it just, it amazes me. I look at this in my mind and I just am amazed at these structures. Anyway, I guess I enjoyed the show today, guys. So,
I love it. Love it. No, yeah. It's good.
Let me see here. Let me see what this does here. Yeah, okay. I don't know whether slide 44, whether you can get to the thing for the replay or not. I'm going to try it and see. It says the 12th here. No, that's still the live feed.
And while you're doing that, I just want to say that picture, it just is illustrative to me of God's majesty and power, you know.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. Yeah, it is. On slide 44, if you click on the text and the bottom part of the text where it says here, it looks like it's a replay of what you and I saw earlier today live. Wow, it's nice. It's nice. Anyway, go there and see what you can find on that. These pictures. Look at slide 48. Look at slide 48 and click on the picture. Now, this is a ring nebula around a planet that exploded. And, the remains, you know, of the planet form this like globe out around this planet. And in fact, it may have polarity to it as far as the roundness of it. It may be an oblate spheroid, or it might be a toroidal discharge. But we seem to be looking right at like a slice through this thing. And if you click on the image, Eric, you'll see that it's a very, very high resolution image on the left. On the right is the image that we used to see, you know, for tens of years. I've looked at this image of this planetary nebula and stuff from later images from telescopes in orbit. What we see here is on the right is such poor resolution. When you get to the left, look at the details of that. I mean, you can see over on the left, you can see a real little sideways galaxy there at about 10 o'clock on the left. And over on the right, it's kind of a blue streak. They weren't sure whether it was a galaxy or what. But now with this high resolution, I mean, you can count the freckles on that galaxy. It's just amazing.
What will this, in the end, and maybe you can't predict this, what would scientists walk away and say about this in through the lens of a God creation?
You're right. How can you know? I mean, surely they must at least appreciate the majesty of this when they study the creation formulas for the universe, the Big Bang and things like that. They have to realize that this is intelligent design.
Right.
And not only that, the galaxies and then the star systems within those, you know, and the planets on some of them, they have ecosystems and life forms probably running on them. And I don't know whether they're like us or whatever, but, you know, Jesus did have, you know, other sheep, other pastures to tend to other than ours, he said. Maybe that means that he was going elsewhere in the universe to where there were other things that God had planted on these places. I don't know. But how can a scientist not look at this and say, what a magnificent, intelligent design. There is a God, you know. I mean, how can they not see that?
I think we've been programmed to see what they want us to see in some cases, but in this case, thank you for sharing those. I mean, a lot of people don't even know that's going on right now, and that's really important to me. That's important in the larger scheme of things. So,
well, if you were watching part of the live link earlier today, you would have seen that all these groups of people that were like on Skype or something on Zoom, all tied into this one production. That's how important it was. There were notable people from all over the planet tuned in to see this event. It is such a major development in scientific discovery, and there's going to be so much come out of this, so much more knowledge. It's not funny. I look at how galaxies formed and clusters of galaxies, but when you push like a straight line force through a fluid like this at high speed, ultra high speeds, it forms a curl, an inertial curl around it, and that's what forms atoms, molecules cluster together if the atoms are formed, and it's how atoms are organized into galaxies and into planets and moons. It's because they're all a series of spherical spinning objects. Spin generates the gravitational effect, and that's for another discussion, I'm sure. But when you see this, then you realize that, like in slide 47, if you click on slide 47, you realize that galaxies can create other galaxies, super galaxies, by merging and merging together. There's a lot of space between the stars, so you can have what they call collisions, but also mergers of galaxies. And that picture there shows, from this new telescope, that very thing happening out there. You see these galactic clusters. There in the three at the top down to lower right, you see two of them merging, a spiral and a globular galaxy down at the bottom merging. It's just, everything is fluid dynamics. I can't stress enough that the hypothesis, the theory that I have for gravity, it does work. It'll allow Einstein stuff up to a point, but then where Einstein's equations fall apart and don't answer questions, fluid mechanics, fluid flows in space, inertia of fluid flows, that explains what we see out there. The first ones they put out, other than that one down in slide 43 and slide 48, this is the Carina Nebula, as you've never seen it before. I mean, I'm sure you've seen it in pictures in astronomy magazines or sites years ago, and it was kind of a reddish glow there. That was the Carina Nebula. It was pretty. But with this one, if you click on the picture, it's stars, and it's a birthplace of stars. In this picture, you're seeing, if you look in the middle of it, you'll be seeing like fingers protruding up. That's the formation of a star. And you're seeing that in great detail now in this shot of Carina Nebula. Mm. It's a birthplace of stars. This is the womb of many stars in that area. Just amazing. I've written them a question I wanted to know about these pictures. You see the stars, some of the brighter ones have the star burst, the six lines coming out, forming six points. Mm-hmm. And I wondered why is that? In photography, something bright in your lens like that, a really bright light source, will generate the star. But usually you have to have a star lens, something to cause that to star like that. And so I've asked them, why is it that some of the stars are emitting these star points and others aren't? I haven't had an answer back yet, but I figured it was a fair question to ask, because is it dust in between us, and the nebula that is highlighting some of the closer stars and, causing this grating effect, that you get with a star lens or star filter? I don't know. But anyway,
it's a good question to ask. I like that question.
What an interesting day. Wow, man. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Okay, I think I've covered most of the things that I need to.
And I just want to mention this. If you like what you're hearing here, and I know you do, folks, make sure you sign up for Stan Dale, his Patreon. He's got monthly meetings, as we do too. Stuff like this, okay? It's really, really great. It's a great informative way to support Stan and Holly's work and all that they do. So go to standeo.com. Make sure you sign up as a patron with Patreon and support his work and enjoy and benefit from his knowledge. So there you have it. Okay, sir.
All right. One last thing on the show images page, slide 54. You saw this, I'm sure. Well, maybe you saw it. I don't know. On the live link to what they were doing today. I'll read the text first. Webb's enormous mirror and precise instruments joined forces to capture most detailed measurements of starlight filtering through atmospheres of a planet outside our solar system. The spectrum of light, which contains information about the makeup of a planetary atmosphere 1,150 light years away, reveals distinct signatures of water. The strength of the signal that Webb detected hints at the significant role the telescope will play in the search for potentially habitable planets in the coming years. Webb's powerful new view also has evidence of haze and clouds that previously studies of this planet did not detect. Now, this is a particular planet, and this is coming through the Webb telescope, the data streams rather than the photographic images, the data streams. And what you see here, if you click on that, is the composition of the atmosphere of that particular planet. And this is how astronomers say, look, it's potentially a habitable planet that will support, you know, human life. Obviously, they're looking for places to jump from the Earth to preserve the civilization should the time come that our star goes red giant and wipes out the planets in our solar system. But I am just amazed looking at this image here at the details they can get out of the data coming through that James Webb telescope in the infrared, showing water, you know, and how much. Wow. It's a scientific instrument other than just a camera. It's not just that. It's helping us look at the planets and the galaxies and learn a lot more about what's there and how it reacts. And long term, should the Earth last, you know, gazillions of years, which I doubt, there would be reasons to go to other planets. But I'm sure that what the Revelation John says at the end of it about the heavens and the earth, you know, shall pass away in this fervent heat, you know, it's gone, but a new heaven and a new earth will replace it. So it's saying that our universe as we know it is going to, you know, melt down, be gone, and back to that primal void where God will again say, okay, let there be light and existence and whatever's in that new universe, I don't know, but this kind of information probably won't be needed. And we're talking about an event that's going to happen 1,000 years after the Great Tribulation, you know, when Jesus has been on the earth teaching and healing the planet and the people. And those of us that are alive with him and serving with him will be doing the same thing. At the end of that 1,000 years and the last great, you know, attempt by Satan to you know, spread evil through the existence, that will be over. And then the heavens and the earth will be replaced. So even though that's coming, I still find this technology here to be able to look out now and see how many habitable worlds there were out there created by this one word spoken, the complex waveform spoken by God into nothingness to create all of this from spin in the void. Just incredible. Anyway.
And if I add this in closing, you know, it's people like Yuval Noah Harari, who are attempting to be small g gods and create their own universe, if you will, recreate or counterfeit God's production. And that's part of the Great Reset. Okay. Stan, we got about a minute and a half.
Okay. Well, as I said, the time for making your choice for the Lord is here. Be sure to click on the slide in between 52 and 54. It's not numbered. Click on the signature there, and it's a reproduction of page 127. It's a very important page for you if you're not yet signed on and trusting Jesus. So,
and print one off for your family members, your friends, whatever. Share that because now's the time.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we've had good news and bad news today.
More good than bad, I think. But
well, I hope so. It's, you know, the good news is in that slide 52 to 54 in between there, that's the good news that you can get you know, an everlasting life at some point in time and to be saved.
Amen. Standale, you never cease to amaze me. You never disappoint. I appreciate that. Thank you so much, my friend. God bless you.
Thank you. God bless you. Bye-bye.
All right, folks, that'll do it for me. That'll do it for us. On behalf of Eric the Tech, myself, and Lady the Studio Dog, have a good night.